Welcome. This is Mark Steiner. You're listening to the Mark Steiner Show here, WEAA-FM, home of the Baltimore Blend, from 6 to 8 a.m., which I help co-host once a month and look forward to it every month out there in the community. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com. We are joined by Edward Wyckoff Williams, columnist and political analyst, whose column Elevating the Dialogue appears in The Griot, The Root, and Slate. Christina Coleman is news and politics editor of The Global Grind. Both have been writing about Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman, and this one-year anniversary coming up. And Edward Wyckoff Williams and Christina Coleman, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
A pleasure to be with you, Mark.
So, it's reading all that you have been writing and others, and folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. We know that just this month, Trayvon Martin would have been 18 years old, and this whole year, let's see if we can get the phones working a little bit better. This whole year, we've seen a real play at making Trayvon Martin the criminal, making him the problem. And of kind of this kind of push to get Zimmerman out in the press and to change the story in some levels, and this has become a PR battle, and the further they push it out, the more chances Christina Coleman that people think that George Zimmerman could walk away.
Hello,
you there?
Yes, Mark.
Yes, can you hear us,
Christina?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead, Christina.
Okay, I can't hear anything.
Yeah, I can't really hear anything either.
Okay, well, let's try to get someone in there.
Is Mark on the line?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I don't think so, unless they put us on hold.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my God. No, you're not on hold. You're here.
They've probably gone to commercial.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, God. So the world's hearing them, but nobody's hearing us.
So how are you today?
Very good. But you've done a lot. Well, you and Michael Skolnick have done a lot.
So we are going to get this phone situation straightened out very quickly. And we'll get Rachel in Cleveland on the air at 410-319-8888, and all those calling in, and try to get the phones working again. So let's see if Christina, are you there?
I'm here.
Good. And Edward?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Not thank you all, but thank whatever gods control the phone lines, and we're back together again. So I won't go through my whole long introduction again. Just let me say, Christina, just your analysis of what's going on. And one last thing I said was there are many folks who see this as a possibility that George Zimmerman could now get off, given how the PR campaign and also how things have changed over the last year and waiting this long for a trial.
Yeah, that's true, but I'd just have to agree with Trayvon's parents, Tracy Martin and Sabrina Fulton, when they say they've kind of gotten what they've asked for. The trial's kind of out of our hands at this point. Zimmerman was arrested 45 days after he allegedly shot Trayvon, and at this point there's not much that we can do, but we can just celebrate Trayvon's life. We can take this opportunity to spark the discussion about gun control in our culture, spark the discussion about race relations in this supposed post-racial world, and spark the conversation about the role of paramilitary or sub-paramilitary sets, how much authority should they have. As you know, George Zimmerman was a neighborhood watch.
Right.
And also, I think this is a great opportunity to discuss the vigilante mindset that the NRA fosters. And that goes along with gun control. So, like I said, at this point, the trial is kind of out of our hands. We can celebrate Trayvon's life, and we can use this opportunity to talk about those subjects that essentially got Trayvon killed.
Edward?
Yes, I completely agree. And I had the opportunity to speak to Sabrina Fulton, Trayvon's mother, a couple of times over the last few months. And I quote her in the piece that's going to be on The Root tomorrow about George Zimmerman and whether or not he's winning the media war. she made a point that I basically want to make, and that's at the heart of a lot of the conversations that I've had on television and radio and in my writing about Trayvon Martin. One of the things that I find so insidious about the way the Zimmerman team, led by Mark O'Mara, has conducted itself is that they are deliberately trying to frame Trayvon as a predator, as the aggressor, and almost as a criminal. And I think that given this country's dark history and the way black males are always and everywhere seen as predators and criminal, it's very easy to do that. And there are a lot of people in this country who have actually bought into that meta-narrative about Trayvon, where the facts are very, very clear, that this was an A and B student, that this was a good kid going out for Skittles and iced tea. And I think, yes, like Christina said, the case is out of our hands. The war that was first waged last year and so successfully waged, thank God for people like you, Mark, and Christina, who kept the thumb on this story, who kept pushing for justice, for it, at the very least a trial. But beyond all that now, there's a whole media war being waged by the Zimmerman team, which is trying to muddy the pool of the facts and to contaminate the jury. And I think that we do need to talk about that, as well as the NRA, as well as gun control, as well as these broader issues about racial profiling.
Mm-hmm. I just want to piggyback.
Go ahead, Christina.
excuse me. I'd just like to piggyback off of that and say that if George Zimmerman is convicted, that's all well and good, but I think that justice will not be served until we stop assuming that young black men are criminals in America because they wear hoods on their head, or because, you know, they wear, you know, whatever, however Omer is trying to paint Trayvon.
Yes.
And I was really struck. There was a on the roof this morning, there was a series of pictures showing this case over the year. And the opening picture was just, could bring tears to anybody's eyes, I think. The opening picture on that series of photos, slides, was Trayvon Martin's father hugging his son not long before he was killed and kissing him on the cheek.
Mm-hmm.
And watching the father-son scene, especially given everything we do in this country to kind of vilify black men as terrible fathers.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Mark, because the quote that Sabrina gave me for this latest article I thought was so powerful that it literally brought me to tears, because she was talking about how the media are trying, or specifically the Zimmerman team, are deliberately trying to frame Trayvon as a criminal or as a predator, as the aggressor who was beating to death this man, and the only recourse he had was to shoot him. And she says that, "I find it offensive that people try to say Trayvon threatened George Zimmerman. Anyone could look at my boy and see he was a kid. He had only just had his growth spurt, and he was a skinny, lanky boy. He was a child, and he was my child." I think placing it in that context,
yeah,
giving this the human narrative, is so important, because like you said, we always talk about, when it comes to the black family, we talk about what's wrong with the black family. We talk about missing fathers. This is a young boy who, granted, his parents were divorced, but his father was very much in his life, and he
right.
was with his father at the time. This was still a strong family unit, and this was a good kid who was doing well in school. And so I think that trying to frame him as anything else just does a disservice to his memory. And I think to that, and what Christina opened up saying, we can honor this boy's memory, I think that's a part of the larger conversation that we need to have about black young boys in general, so that we stop doing what we do in terms of allowing our society to always and everywhere treat them as if they aren't three-fifths of a person, and as if their lives and then their deaths don't matter.
Yeah.
No, I agree, and I think that this is one of the reasons that we're doing this half an hour today and remembering Trayvon Martin and talking about where we go from here, and not as a debate, because sometimes you just have to put on programs that are not a debate right and left, this side and that.
Yeah.
You just can't always do that. At least I can't always do that. It depends on the issue. But this particular is when you've seen that the right to carry law, that Florida was the first state in the country, the NRA and ALEC pushed, they have not been able to pass on the law since the killing of Trayvon Martin, which I find very interesting.
And I think that's partly because of the political will, right, but also because of what Christina was saying about the power of the NRA. So I'd be really interested to see what she had to say about that.
Christina?
Yes. Can you just repeat that?
Sure. No, yeah. What I was saying was that Florida was the first state to pass this kind of concealed weapon right to carry, defend yourself law, mm-hmm. And it was pushed by NRA, and the bill was literally written by ALEC, the right-wing organization of mm-hmm. that pushes state legislatures around the country. But they haven't been able to pass another law like this since Trayvon Martin was murdered.
And hopefully they won't be able to pass a law like that in the future. I think a lot of that has to do with the president's push for a comprehensive gun control plan. I think it has a lot to do with the other gun violence events that have gone on in the nation since Trayvon's death. And, I mean, those are all really tragic events, but I'm happy that this is a discussion and that laws like this aren't being passed. So let's just hope that we can keep the same traction up and that, you know, we can kind of keep our eye on the NRA and those gun control laws.
I think another part of this that really struck me. Someone wrote something today on one of my Facebook pages, and I wrote back to him when they put on there that this is that a man is innocent until declared guilty, and I wrote a long piece back to him. One of the things I wrote to him was that Zimmerman killed Trayvon, and I believe from all I've read and seen, the motivations were fear by race
mm-hmm.
and typical yeah. response by the local police with no arrest necessary. Until
yeah.
much later, just a white man defending his community from a hooded young black man.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of what we have to wrestle with here.
That's probably the most central issue we have to wrestle with, Mark, because a part of I think a part of what gets lost in the debate is the distinction between racism and racial profiling. It's almost, I think, from all the facts that have been presented in this case so far, this is a prima facie case of racial profiling. Whether or not George Zimmerman is a racist is something that really you can only know if you know him in a very intimate way,
right.
If he told you, or if you literally lived in his mind and heart, which is something no one can possibly do except, you know, God, if you believe in him. And so I think that we should get away from calling people racist and actually talk about their actions. And the way that you just laid that out is so brilliant and yet so simple, because you can look at the facts of this case and on the face of it see that this was clearly an instance of racial profiling that ended quite tragically for an unarmed teenage boy. And I think that that's where the conversation needs to start and end, and where we need to really be making changes is not just to our gun laws, but to our behavior with respect to police authority, because George Zimmerman was essentially acting as a police officer, mm-hmm. and they do that kind of thing to young black and Latino boys every day. And so that's really what needs to change in our society.
But you know what's interesting is that supporters are also labeling Zimmerman as a Hispanic, and the defense is trying to use that, and I think to try to say that people of color can't be racist towards one another. And I think that's another issue that we need to explore.
Thank you, Christina. Exactly. We have to dismantle that myth that somehow
yeah.
because he's half Hispanic, he can't
that
be
he
racist.
Can't be racist towards a person of color.
Yeah, or at least prejudice. I mean,
yes.
and that's
mm-hmm.
that's almost the point, that actually it doesn't require him to be racist at all. He could just be prejudiced against black males.
Or you know, something I think sometimes when I'm looking at this, and I've been thinking a lot about this, is that, and let's see what you two think of this. And listen, we'll get to our phones right here. I already have this at 410-319-8888. And Lamar, we're going to come right to your call. Is that, you know, they're making a lot of Zimmerman's mother being with Afro-Peruvian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
And,
I'm so over that.
I
could not believe Bill Maher allowed that on his show. I was shocked.
But he did.
Shocked.
And but the issue is, to me, is that I look at it from a different angle, which is there's a reason why, as I try to explain to people in these conversations, there's a reason why anybody with a black child, especially a black male child, sits down, many people sit down and talk to their sons and grandsons and say, this is what you have to do if you are stopped by the police. This is how you have to behave. This is how you have to respond. Now, the fact that people feel they have to do that
mm-hmm.
says something's wrong.
Definitely. Definitely.
It says that we still live under the auspices and the culture of the Jim Crow South.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it says. That there are black codes, and then there's a code for everyone else.
And it
That's
doesn't matter if the cop is black, white, Latino, or Asian. Man,
or
woman,
Asian,
gay,
exactly.
or straight. Doesn't make any difference.
Yep.
Because I'm actually positive. I am almost positive that had that been a hooded Mexican boy, that child would have ended up dead as well. I don't think that George Zimmerman, I think the only instance in which the child would not have ended up dead is if he was blonde, blue-eyed, or so obviously white that George Zimmerman would have then never seen him as suspicious. Because we've almost indoctrinated this idea that the young black male is a thug no matter who he is. And that's what was so powerful. And I'm sure you and Christina will agree with this and all the listeners out there, that a part of what has so unsettled the debate and what unsettled the debate last year but placed it in its proper context at the same time was Barack Obama's declaration that if I had a son,
Absolutely.
He would look like Trayvon. That basically means in a nation with no king, we basically have a president whose children are the closest thing to princes and princesses. That means that any black boy, no matter his station in life, no matter his background, whether he's buying Skittles or whether he's selling crack, will still be met with the same force, deadly force, and the same attitudes, the same destructive attitudes. That's what we must uproot here.
Yeah.
That is the problem here.
Mm-hmm.
Let me open the phone so that our listeners have a say with our two guests, Edward Wyckoff Williams, columnist, political analyst, who you could read Elevating Dialogue, which is The Griot, The Root, Slate, Christina Coleman, news and political editor for The Global Grind, which is an incredible online publication, 410-319-8888. Lamar, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Mr. Steiner.
Welcome.
I was listening to this, and I heard one of your guests, and she used the term comprehensive gun control. And I don't have as good of an audience as you do. And I think wording it as gun control is actually one of those Frank Luntz wordsmith ploys to get people to be against it, because nobody wants their actual guns controlled. And rather than, it's probably better to just say comprehensive gun safety or comprehensive reducing gun violence. But whenever we keep, and even with all the dialogue, even from progressives, they're still using the word gun control. So I'm just hoping that we could kind of change the language on that, and that way groups like ALEC and all these NRAs, using the word gun control is almost nearing getting rid of the Second Amendment. So that's just one little quick comment.
All right, let's go, Lamar. Go ahead, Christina.
Yeah, well, I'd have to disagree. Essentially, it is gun control. I get what you're saying, and I understand that if we did kind of change the language, maybe it would appeal to others, but this is not a perfect world. And the fact is that anytime you try to strengthen gun laws or come up with new gun safety rules or whatever the case may be, that gun advocates are going to be scared. There is real fear there. I don't think it's a matter of changing the language. I think it's just America's obsession with guns. We're going to get scared anytime someone says, let me hold your gun. Let me take control of your gun. Let me put some safety rules on your gun. I just don't know if changing the language would do much for gun advocates.
I completely agree. I think it's a matter of semantics. I completely agree with Christina that it's just a matter of semantics, because ultimately the end of this is the same. I would also want to make a point to the caller, as brilliant as I think his understanding of the nuances of this is. At the end of the day, if we're going to talk about the Second Amendment actually indoctrinates a well-regulated militia, right? And so if we were just to nix the militia part of it and just talk about well-regulated, there has been then gun control since the Founding Fathers wrote the document, right? And so I think that that's a part of what's hypocritical about the people on the far right in particular, but organizations like the NRA, claiming that somehow gun control is anti-Second Amendment. That's simply untrue. And then I would go so far as to say that at the end of the day, and this sort of furthers Christina's point, that ultimately gun control will lead to gun safety. So we can talk about it all in sort of one context. But anytime we have six-year-old children, babies, being shot to death with semi-automatic rifles, their arms and their faces being shattered, in Newtown, Connecticut, and all these random deaths of young children in cities like Chicago. Anytime this is happening to our babies, then the society must stand up to its own values. And I think whether we call it gun control or gun safety or attacking gun violence does not matter. We need to be protecting our children.
I want to ask a question about that to the two of you. Let me get another caller in here first. I promised I would. 410-319-8888. Angela in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, I just feel like, first of all, Trayvon Martin was never the bad guy in this situation. He did nothing wrong but defend himself.
Right.
Anybody could stand their ground. It was he had the right to stand his ground. He was being pursued by someone and didn't know anything that was going on. George Zimmerman should have stayed and did not pursue as he was told not to. When he continued to pursue that boy, he should have at least identified himself if he pursued and was not told to, but he chose to. He should have identified himself. When he pursued, he initiated this whole thing. If he had not pursued that boy, none of this would have ever happened. The police had been notified. He should have let it go. He started the whole ball rolling. And him having that gun, he was in a situation where if something happened, he was going to use it.
Angela, I think that's part of the problem. And I think that we have this, you know, there are many cities where we have these gated communities and people who are armed and unarmed. I mean, they're unregulated. And that's part of the issue. I think that I hope that we address in this. And you know, what we were talking about earlier with the Second Amendment. Before we go to break, it's an interesting history of the Second Amendment, because when I was doing a lot of research in this, preparing for other shows around both this, the killing of Trayvon Martin, and around the gun control issue, the Second Amendment is all wrapped up in white-black world of America from the beginning when these militias took place and it was pushed, that amendment was pushed by the South to make sure that black folks didn't have guns. and only certain people were allowed to have guns, and you had to be in a militia to have it, to Reconstruction, where the radical Republicans who were pushing for Reconstruction, their interpretation of the Second Amendment back then was it is being enforced because black folks in the South have to have the right to bear arms to defend their homes.
Yes, which was then adopted. That ideology, remember, was adopted by the Black Panthers.
Right.
And as soon as the Black Panthers started to do that,
right.
I wrote about this, and I think you and I talked about it. When the Black Panthers adopted that ideology in 1967, was it? Then Governor Reagan of California and the NRA immediately wanted gun control, and Reagan signed gun control into law. Why? Because all of a sudden now, quote-unquote, well-regulated militias that were black folks now had guns.
Yep.
Exactly. we have to take a very brief break. Can you both stay with us for another, like, 5 or 10
Definitely.
Minutes?
Oh, sure. Definitely.
Good. All right. So and Moai, you are the next caller up. 410-319-8888. We'll come back to this conversation about Trayvon Martin on the tragic anniversary of the tragic killing of Trayvon Martin, which took place this evening. And we'll be back with Edward Wyckoff Williams and Christina Coleman. Don't go away. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We are here with Edward Wyckoff Williams, columnist and political analyst, whose column Elevating the Dialogue appears in The Griot, The Root, and Slate. Christina Coleman is news and politics editor for Global Grind. We're talking about Trayvon Martin for the next 5 or 10 minutes or so before we meet some young people from the community who want to talk about guns in their neighborhoods and what they think needs to happen, and hear the voices of the youth who live it, see it, and are around it all the time. 410-319-8888 is the number here, and as I promised, we'll go right to the phones. And Moai, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. You're in the guest.
Welcome.
What I wanted to say about the Trayvon situation, well, actually about the racism, comparing that to racial profiling as if there is a difference. And I don't feel that there's a difference. Like one of your guests said, that's just semantics. When you can say that if anybody but blue-eyed, blonde-haired white kid, that was obviously, that you could tell was obviously a white person, would be, you know, would have that happen to that kid. You know, it's racism. You know, and no, you can't know what's in a person's heart, but you can kind of get an idea what's in a person's heart by his actions. And this person had the actions of a racist, you know. And I want to kind of, you know, look at it a different way. It's the same point, but it's a different way of looking at it. Well, I see a young lady, African American young lady, who dates nothing but white guys, right? And they feel, hey, this is a pluralistic society, or, you know, I can date anybody I want to, but the fact that you are only date outside of your race is racist, and that goes to what one of you guests, I don't know who one of you guests, who said that, I lost my train of thought.
You're trying to make an analogy between what the depth of racism is? Is that what you're trying to get to some point about that?
Yeah. But anyway, I think I made my okay. Point about the other
Christina,
that I have.
Christina, you want to respond? I think you made the statement.
I think he's talking about the difference between racial profiling and racism. No,
correct.
And that's what the other guest was.
Well, it was Edward. Yeah. You were saying that.
Yes, and you know, I'm actually inclined to agree with him. I had made a slightly different point, but I am inclined to agree with him. I think for purposes of analyzing this from the perspective that we do, we being you, Mark, myself, and Christina, we have a responsibility to just deal in facts for the most part, particularly in terms of our reporting. And so I think we can speculate on what's in George Zimmerman's mind or heart, or how he's been acculturated in American society to see young black males. I think based off of what I think just based off the facts, we can see that, right? But then I think to the caller's point, I think the caller really has an important point, and one that most people in America probably feel, that ultimately if your actions then lead you to act in such a way that you denigrate someone's life or destroy someone's life in this case based off of racial prejudices and attitudes, then you can't then call yourself a non-racist. And I think that, but I think for purposes of justice, we don't really necessarily need to dwell on that point. What we do need is justice to be served, and then a broader conversation around why we cannot go on racially profiling young black and Latino males.
But one of the things I want to get to, and we get another call in here before we move on to our guest who just arrived for the next segment, is that, you know, this is something I think we have to wrestle with. It's not easy to parse out. I was listening to one of the speeches by Martin Luther King the other night again, where he demanded in Birmingham, Alabama, that you have black police officers that didn't exist in the 50s. And so they have black police officers, and we have lots of people of color in our police departments. But rather than change the departments, in some senses, the institution changed the people in them.
It has.
So that whether you are black or Latino, where, as I said earlier in the program, that the enemy still becomes young black people, mm-hmm. young
yeah.
people of color, no matter who
construct.
You are.
It's a social construct. It's not biological, and we have to deal with that. We have to deal with that type of racism.
And it's not just. I agree with Christina, but it's not just a social construct, like sort of the broader social construct in which we all live, or socio-political and socio-economic construct in which we all live. But it's actual policy, and I think this is what's so problematic. And I'm sure this happens in Baltimore, but I certainly haven't read that much about it or written that much about it. But this happens in New York, where I'm sitting right now, all the time.
Right.
And Bloomberg, for all his "we want gun control," has defended a racist and discriminatory policy of stop and frisk, despite the fact that the numbers show that for all the small numbers of white males stopped, they were twice more likely to have a weapon. So how then can you justify stop and frisk under the purposes that somehow you are trying to find guns, when actually what you're trying to find is marijuana. And actually you're trying to usher young black boys into the system in which they will forever be trapped. You know that you want to create a neo-slavery, Bloomberg. Be honest about it.
So
when you have police, when you have police taught to do that, whether they're black, Asian, white, Latino, whatever, then they become a part of the problem.
So, and you know, I think that that's because you don't understand, Edward. The issue is because white people carry guns just to defend themselves.
Oh yes, that's obviously the only reason white people carry guns because they clearly aren't shooting young black kids in the dark.
I just want some clarity. That's all.
Let's just have some clarity. Guess what? And black people carry Skittles to defend themselves.
Exactly.
And iced teas, bottles of iced tea.
Yeah, Skittles and iced tea to defend ourselves.
Clearly, his black eye came from a bag of Skittles. Let me go to one more quick call and a quick response, because we have these young people in the studio. I want to give a chance to have their say about their communities and guns. 410-319-8888. Diane and Laurel, you're on the air.
Hi,
Diane.
I just wanted to give a little bit of information in regards to Trayvon's mother and the brother of the guy who's on trial for shooting him.
Uh-huh.
They were both interviewed on NPR's Tell Me More with Michelle Martin yesterday.
Yes.
And today. And his mother, this being his anniversary, said that she did no longer want this to be looked upon seen globally as a black and white issue. She wanted this to be seen as what it is, which is a child or a kid, teenager, being shot by someone. And she and her lawyer are working to see what they can do to amend that law that they have in Florida. I forget what
they're called.
Stand your ground.
Yeah, that's the one. They're working to amend that because of what has happened to her son. I heard the interview today of the brother of the man who's being on trial for shooting him, and he made some excellent points of how the media, a lot of it misconstrued the interpretation of that call of who he was actually. Those comments that he made were not what the actual interview, the media had perceived it to be to everybody in the world. So there's a lot of misinformation about this that has been given out in the sensationalism, I guess, of the media about this.
So,
and I think it's very poignant that his mother say what she said yesterday and to take this forward to what it should be, which is based on facts and not sensationalism.
And I appreciate the call. And Christina and Edward, we have literally 2 minutes.
We have to
wrap up. So thank you, Diana. Would you like to give a response back? Edward, you wrote a message, and Christina did as well. So
I think I appreciate her response, but I think it's naive. And I would say this, that a part of what Robert Zimmerman Jr. is trying to do is to create a new face, a more amiable face for his brother. And it clearly is working, because callers like that actually have started to buy into the idea that somehow George Zimmerman was framed incorrectly. What I would say, particularly with this whole showing his bloodied face, I really find that sort of gruesome and disgusting, largely because I want people to see the bullet wound in Trayvon's dead body, his bloodied body with broken or scarred hands fighting for his life in the gardens of Sanford. If they showed that photo the way that we saw Emmett Till in the 50s, perhaps people wouldn't be so concerned about how George Zimmerman is being portrayed in the media.
And Christina, a very quick thought, finally, before we go to break.
I was going to add, I think what the caller was referring to was Zimmerman suing NBC over the 911 tapes. But on the 911 tapes, even if they were cut for time or whatever the case, Zimmerman still racially profiled Trayvon. He said he looks like he's up to no good. It looks like he's on drugs. He's got his hands in his waistband. And there's really
Thank
no way you,
you can Christina.
Misconstrue that. Those are pretty direct comments. So I agree. I don't think that... I think that Robert Zimmerman is definitely trying to make his brother seem like the one who needed to defend himself against this person. And Zimmerman's comments, there's really no way you can misconstrue that. That's definitely racially profiling.
I want to thank both of you. This has been, I can't wait for you both to come back on the air with us. Christina Coleman, news and politics editor for Global Grind. Edward Wyckoff Williams, political analyst, columnist, whose column Elevating the Dialogue appears in The Griot, The Root, and Slate. Thank you both so much for taking your time today
thank
to talk
you
about
so
this very
much.
Important issue. Thank
A
you.
A pleasure, Mark.
Thank you.
Thank you.